Hi, this is Drago Șionescu, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 60. Sony releases more full-frame lenses. In this episode, Sony releases two new full-frame lenses and a new camera. Flickr may be up for sale. Two astrophotographers capture something not often seen. A Sigma 24-70 f2.8 seems to be on the horizon. And a photographer wonders what it would be like if other professions had the same problems that photography does. All that and more in episode 60 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Dragos, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. Dragos Ionescu is a Romanian living in London who's in his final year of studying photography at the University of East London. The mothership over at Petapixel.com featured him in January of this year, 2016, due to a series of portraits he shot of his 75-year-old grandfather, a retired colonel in the Romanian army. His grandfather has a face and demeanor that was just made to be photographed, and Dragos captured it beautifully. His work has been featured in magazines, numerous places online, and there's no doubt that he has a bright future in photography. He is really, really good. To see his work, check out his website at idragos.co.uk. That's idragos.co.uk. Or hit the show notes for the link. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 60 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much. And thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you're invested in the Sony E-mount system, you might be interested to know that the electronics giant has just announced two new full-frame lenses, a 50mm f1.8 and a 70-300mm f4.5 to 5.6 zoom. Sony's new FE50mm f1.8 weighs in at just 6.77 ounces, that's 192 grams, and of it, the company says it, quote, delivers an outstanding blend of performance, compactness, and value, making it a perfect choice for hobbyist photographers and videographers looking to experience the benefits of a wide aperture prime lens at an attainable cost, end quote. And they're correct, because this lens, available in May 2016, will cost just $250 US. The alternative, the amazing Zeiss 55mm f1.8, which I owned for a number of months about a year or so ago, is one of the sharpest lenses I've ever owned, but it's $1,000. Now, I really enjoy that lens. It wasn't right for me, but I gotta tell you, that thing is tack sharp. You will find wrinkles in people's skin that they didn't know that they had. I know I found it with me. It was a little distressing. That's partly why I went back. But it's a really, really good lens. Unfortunately, though, it's $1,000. You know, most people aren't going to drop that kind of money for a 55mm lens. But at $250, this new lens by Sony is totally doable. And the quality might just be close enough for most people. I think most people won't even see the difference. So it's nice to see that Sony came out with this lens. This was definitely high on the list of lenses that people wanted. And now you've got your nifty 50 available. Now, in addition to that lens, Sony announced its FE 70-300mm f4.5 to 5.6 GOSS. And while that's not at all a fast lens like their new 70-200mm f2.8 G Master, this is Sony's first E-mount lens to reach that 300mm focal length. Now, this lens gives Sony shooters more reach without the use of a teleconverter, which is always good because personally, I don't care how they are these days. They degrade the image quality. They slow things down. It's just not the same as having that longer focal length natively without extending it by 1.4x, 2x, 1.7, whatever you want to do. So with this new 70-300mm, when you're on the 300 end, you're only doing f5.6 at best. So it is nowhere near as quick as an f2.8 lens, which doesn't exist yet from Sony. So that's two stops of light loss. You know, when you go from 5.6 to 4 to 2.8, you gain two stops of light. So you're losing two stops with this lens, and that's going to be okay for a lot of people. And also, you don't get the same bokeh, or bokeh as some people call it, incorrectly. Just like I say ISO when it's actually ISO, it doesn't really matter when it comes down to it. That background blur, the bokeh, whatever, is not as good at f5.6 as it is at f2.8. But right now, that lens doesn't exist. This new zoom is pretty compact and lightweight, features two aspherical elements, two ED elements, Sony's nano AR coating, has a minimum focusing distance of just 3 feet, that's 0.9 meters, excellent corner-to-corner sharpness if you believe the materials they put out, built-in optical steady shot stabilization, has speedy and silent autofocus, and is resistant to dust and moisture. All very helpful things, and when this is available sometime in May 2016 at the very reasonable price tag of $1,200 US, I suspect a lot of people are going to be buying them and testing it out. And as we've seen from recent Sony lenses, I don't think there's a bad one in the bunch that they've come out with lately. They all seem to be really good. You really can't go wrong with lenses these days. So with these two new lenses, Sony fills in some holes in the lineup. And while their stable of lenses isn't complete by any means, by any stretch of anyone's imagination right now, especially if you shoot sports and action, that's two nice steps in the right direction with these lenses. You might remember that in February 2016, Sony announced their G-Master series of lenses, which everyone seems to just love. They are amazing, amazing pieces of glass by all accounts. And a key piece of that, for those shooting sports and or action, is that 70-200mm f2.8 G-Master they came out with. Now, currently, as I record this at the end of March 2016, Sony doesn't have a pro sports body. You know, the A6000 and the A6300 are both extremely capable bodies, but you're just not going to shoot the Super Bowl or the Olympics or anything on deadline for any important client with those bodies as your main. You're just not going to do that. But I believe that sometime by the end of this year, 2016, we're going to see a pro sports body out of Sony. And with that, I think we're also going to see super telephotos. Because if you think about it, it's pointless to drop a pro sports body on people without at very least a 300mm f2.8, right? I mean, I've shot a lot of sports, and you can get it done with a 70-200, but not if you're in the pro arena. Not if you're shooting for magazines, newspapers, etc. You need something at least in the 300mm range, and often 400mm. So I think that if a pro sports body materializes in 2016, and I really believe that's going to happen, we're not only going to see a 300-28, but we're going to see a 400-28 as well. Because why not? When, not if, Sony wows us with a true sports body, it's going to have to deliver on some seriously long glass as well. They just have to. Otherwise, it's pointless. And with those G-Master lenses that we've already seen released and people love, they're going to have quite a compelling lineup at that point. But in the meantime, if you're on a budget, the A6000 or the 6300, along with that 70-300mm they just announced, could get the job done if you're shooting anything up to, let's say, high school sports in fairly decent lighting. You'd probably be good to go. So stay tuned, because I think we're going to see some really compelling glass out of Sony in 2016. We're going to see that pro body. And I think we're going to see another couple of surprises. So it's a really exciting year. I know I say that every year, but we got so many great things that are coming out, and they're going to just wow us. I just have a feeling. And I still think that Canon and Nikon are going to come out with mirrorless bodies sometime in 2016. I'm thinking it's going to be late summer. Maybe it's going to be the fall, but we're going to see something in 2016. And I think it's going to be a great, great year for photography. Next. In recent months, we've speculated that longtime photo sharing service Flickr, currently owned by Yahoo, may end up being sold off. And now, if you believe the reports out there, it looks like that's a virtual certainty. As you may know, Yahoo isn't anywhere near the company it once was. Google continues to run the table as it barrels forward, and Yahoo continues to be less and less relevant over time. I mean, when was the last time you used Yahoo for anything? Exactly. In a recent episode, we talked about how Flickr pulled its desktop uploader behind the pro membership curtain, apparently in an effort to try to get more people to pay for their pro service. And now it looks like Yahoo itself is on the auction block and is taking offers for its various businesses. According to the Wall Street Journal, Yahoo sent out letters to potential buyers in recent days asking that they submit bids over the next 2 weeks for its businesses and holdings. Reportedly in these letters, Yahoo asked companies to name what they wish to buy and at what price. They're saying that these companies have until April 11, 2016 to make an offer, and that could very well put Flickr in new hands by the time Yahoo's annual meeting comes around in just a few months from now. If this report is accurate, there are about 40 companies that are interested in acquiring all or part of Yahoo. Those companies are said to be Verizon, Time, Microsoft, some private equity firms, and many others. Flickr itself was purchased, you might remember, back in 2005 by Yahoo for the relatively small price of just $25 million. And who knows how much they let it go for these days. It's really not quite the giant it used to be. And hey, you know what? Collectively, in our couch cushions, we might have enough to buy Flickr. I don't know how much it's worth these days, but we're soon going to find out, I think. If you're a Flickr user and you really enjoy the service, news of what seems to be an impending sale of it is cause for concern. Who's the new owner going to be? Are they going to put much-needed resources into making it great again and viable for the future? Or are they going to make changes that are just going to run it into ground? Like, we've seen that happen with so many other services, right? Time will tell, of course, so stay tuned, and we'll let you know what comes of this. I suspect that we're going to hear something about this not too long from now. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy, and so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with your photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be out shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem, making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And the FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pictures of your receipts and organize them later so you have them ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You know, they believe in this podcast and we want to support them, right? You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to doing what we all love to do, taking photos and editing them. On average, FreshBooks users get paid nearly a week faster when accepting online payments through their system, cut 2 days a month out of administrative tasks, and double their revenue in the first 24 months. That is amazing. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers, and that's huge. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners a free 30-day trial, so make sure you take advantage of that. Go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's PETAPIXEL, of course. Thank you so much, FreshBooks, for your support. Overall, I generally choose to wait until a lens is actually announced rather than talk about rumors. But I think there's enough evidence that Sigma's working on a 24-70mm f2.8 art series that it's worth talking about right now. And this is based on a patent filed by the company back in 2014, which was just published last week, which shows a 24-70mm f2.8 DG-OS HSM art series lens, and there's no doubt that is coming out this year. If you're a Canon or Nikon shooter, you might own the 24-70 2.8 from that particular company, but these days we're no longer limited to the big two. Third-party lens makers like Sigma and Tamron are making lenses that are comparable or even better in some cases than what Nikon and Canon are making. Sigma especially knocks it out of the park with their Art Series lenses. They're amazing. So then, a 24-70 2.8 Art Series lens from Sigma makes a lot of sense. You know, it's near the top of the list of the most requested lenses by photographers, and I think that we're definitely going to see that sometime in 2016. There's no doubt about it. If we go by what Sigma's done in the past, this new lens would come out in Canon EF, Nikon F, and Sigma SA mounts, and the price tag would certainly be a lot less than Canon's 24-70, which is currently about $1,750 US, or Nikon's, which is $1,700 US. Currently in Sigma's art lineup, they've got the 50-100mm f1.8, the 18-35mm f1.8, and that one's for crop sensor bodies, the 24-35 f2, which is great, and the awesome 24-105 f4. That last lens I own personally, and I love it. It is tack sharp, It is awesome. It covers a great range. But you know what? One stop faster at f2.8, a lens that covered most of that range, like a 24 to 70 would, that would be a lot more preferable. Because one more stop of light, who wouldn't want it, right? And the better bokeh. You know, I'd be really surprised if we didn't see this lens out of Sigma by the time the Photokina show in Germany comes around in September of this year, 2016. If it's anything like their other Art Series lenses, photographers are going to snap this up like crazy. I think they're going to have trouble keeping it in stock, actually, because this is a great, great zoom range. It's a classic lens, and I think Sigma is going to do an amazing job with it like they do with their other lenses. So stay tuned, because I think we're going to see this in a matter of months now. Next. If you're in the market for a compact camera that can do a whole lot, Sony's new RX10 Mark III might fit the bill for you. The 25x Super Zoom has what's essentially a 24 to 600mm f2.4 to f4 lens in it, packs a 1-inch 20.1 megapixel XMOR RS CMOS sensor with a Bionz X image processor, and that's essentially the same sensor that's found in the RX10 Mark II. Around back, this dust and moisture resistant camera is a 2.36 million dot OLED electronic viewfinder, also known as an EVF, as well as a tilting 3-inch 1.228 million dot LCD screen. Amazingly, this camera has an ISO range of 64 all the way up to 12,800, 40 times super slow motion at up to 960 frames per second, 4K video recording, which is pretty amazing in a camera like this, I think. Built-in optical steady shot stabilization, which is really going to come in handy when you're at the 600mm end of this darn thing, right? It can focus down at 2.36 feet, that's 72 centimeters, and it has a 0.49x max magnification at 600mm. What's really cool are the video features in this, and I think that some pros might actually take a look at this. It's not going to be their main camera, but it might be decent for certain uses. What it's going to have is picture profiles, S-Log2/S-Gamut, Gamma display assist, time code, an external mic jack, headphone monitoring, of course, an autofocus speed of just 0.09 seconds, so that's really cool. And of course, it's going to have Wi-Fi and NFC connectivity. If this all sounds interesting to you, the new Sony RX10 Mark III will be available sometime in May of 2016 with a price tag of $1,500 US. Now, for me personally, I haven't been too excited about these compact cameras. You know, these aren't point-and-shoot looking cameras. They almost look like DSLRs, but they have built-in lenses. And for me, I think that's kind of limiting. I've got the great Sony RX100 Mark IV. That has a built-in lens, but it's compact. You know, it fits in your pants pocket. It fits in your shirt pocket. It's great for what it does. And then, of course, you got mirrorless cameras with interchangeable lenses, and you've got DSLRs. But right there in the middle of all that, you have these weird compact cameras, and I call them weird mostly because I don't find them useful to me, like I said, and they're not super compact. I don't exactly see where they fit in. I know people love these things. I just don't personally get it, but they're, I think, a good value. At $1,500, this camera does a whole lot. These super zooms are pretty darn amazing. I mean, a 600 millimeter lens essentially in this thing, that is pretty cool. And like I said, you totally need that image stabilization in there, because unless you're locked down on a tripod, that is going to be pretty rough all the way zoomed in to 600 millimeters. I don't know who's buying these things. Are these guys that are spying on their neighbors like eight houses down? What are they doing with these? I don't know. But they are pretty cool cameras. It's nice to see that they're making cameras for all segments of photographers, and I think that's a good thing overall. I just don't personally get it, but that's just me. Next. You likely know the name Chase Jarvis. I'd be surprised if you didn't, actually. He's one of the most well-known photographers out there today, and you also might know him from founding Creative Live. Well, Jarvis put out an episode of his show, Chase Jarvis Raw, in which he talks to an artist and author named Austin Kleon. This author wrote the book, Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. And he has three main points in this four-minute video. Number one is becoming a documentarian of what you do has intrinsic value. Number two, showing your work serves as self-promotion. And number three, sharing your work can create a community around it. The bottom line here, if you're shooting photos, it's probably a good idea to show them. So many people hold on to their photography and don't let anyone ever see it, and I think that's a shame. What's the use in shooting them if no one's ever going to see them? You know, unless it makes you happy to see them yourself and you don't care if anyone else does, That's fine, but I think that photos were meant to be seen. And I agree with Chase and Austin here. Show your work. Launch a website which shows off your best work and continually improve on what's there. I think that's a good challenge. You know, it's essentially your portfolio. And I think that's a good way of helping yourself improve by putting your best work up there and trying to improve on that over time and top what you've done. And if you're brave, post them on Facebook groups, ask for critique and criticism. In forum terms, that's what they call CNC. You know, not everyone's going to like your work, but they might have some really good feedback for you. But you're going to need to develop a thick skin if you do this. Embrace the feedback because everyone else sees things differently than you do. And while some are going to troll you and cause you grief because they enjoy that, know that going into it and just shake it off, I say. Over time, you're going to learn what people like and what they don't like. And in some online forums, only constructive, non-mean criticism is allowed. And that is so, so helpful. Photographers who do this learn a ton from that, and their photography advances, I think, a lot further than those who don't get this kind of criticism. You know, we don't know what we don't know. So realize that and embrace it, I say. Grow as a photographer, and part of that, I think, is putting your work out there and letting it be seen. Next. Photographer Brent McCombs wondered what it would be like if other professions were treated like those in photography these days. As he said in a recent blog post, quote, "Here's what a part-time professional's Facebook might look like if other careers experienced the everyone's a photographer phenomenon," end quote. Among the handful of professions that he did this for, he imagines that for someone who thinks they're a dentist, they might post something like this, quote, "I just bought an awesome set of pro dental picks, so I thought I would throw it out there and see if anyone wants some dental work done. Let me know. I'm not totally professional, and I didn't go to school for it or anything, and I got the tools to work on tiny parts and plastic modeling, but if you don't want to pay the crazy rates full-time dentist charge, just contact me. I'm just starting out on this, so I'm happy to do it for free," end quote. You get the idea here. It's the age we live in. If you're a working pro, you're probably super annoyed with the democratization of photography. But the genie is out of the bottle, the horses have left the barn, and other metaphors. Oh, and the fat lady has sung. That one too. Let's not forget the fat lady. To make a living at photography these days, you need to change your business model, as we've said before. Work harder and smarter, and that's just how it is. Oh, and being really good doesn't hurt either, does it? Now, would it help if people didn't give their work away for free or undercut working pros? Of course. But that's not going to stop anytime soon. It just isn't. Now, Brent's a funny guy, but he's an even more amazing photographer. And if you'd like to see his work, head on over to his website at alterego.zenfolio.com. Next. It's really amazing what tools we have available to us to create images. I mean, here it is, 2016. I'll be saying the same thing every year because, of course, technology gets better and better. So it's a bit of a dumb statement to say that. But you know what? I'm just blown away by what we have out there. I remember what it was like back in the old days of film and even the early days of digital. It wasn't pretty. Now we've got so many tools available to us. And while not practiced by everyone, astrophotography is an area where I think that we're going to see a lot of amazing things in the years going forward. We're going to be seeing things of other worlds that we have never seen before, and that's pretty cool stuff, especially if you're a space nerd like me. I mean, I'm going to admit right here, when I was in high school, I went to space camp. I know, you can all make fun of me now. It's cool. Were you surprised? I don't think so. I mean, my favorite show is Doctor Who. You see a pattern here, right? Well, what's really exciting is what two of my fellow space nerds on this blue marble we call Earth caught on camera what appears to be an explosion on Jupiter as a result of an impact by a very, very large asteroid. Both Garrett Kernbauer and John McKean had their telescopes fitted with cameras and trained it on Jupiter on March 17th of 2016 when they caught something that neither of them had ever seen. In fact, it's something that few are ever going to see, let alone through their telescope. Kernbauer writes, quote, "I was observing and filming Jupiter with my Skywatcher Newton 200/1000 telescope. The seeing was not the best, so I hesitated to process the videos. Nevertheless, 10 days later, I looked through the videos, and I found this strange light spot that appeared for less than 1 second on the edge of the planetary disk. Thinking back to Schumacher leaving 9, my only explanation for this is an asteroid or comet that enters Jupiter's high atmosphere and burns up slash exploded very fast, end quote. Now, the gear that was used to create these images is not too expensive. I mean, your camera and lenses may be more expensive than the telescopes they used. So if you want to do a kind of photography that most people aren't doing, maybe instead of turning your camera to something on Earth, maybe turn it up to the heavens. And you might actually capture something that very few people will ever photograph. So the video of what was captured by these two is really cool, and I think you'd like to see it. Head on over to the show notes for episode 60 at petapixel.com/podcast, and we'll have a link to that for you. I'd like to thank you for joining us here in episode 60 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And if you want to support our efforts here on the show, go ahead and give our sponsor FreshBooks a try. Head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter Petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. They've got a 30-day free trial for you, and it's all yours for the claiming. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 61. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.